Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we are back after, well, the final weekend of the longest Six Nations competition ever, and also the continuation of the Tri-Nations tournament, Bledisloe 3, and there was some other rugby going on. There's plenty more to talk about besides. We're back together in the rugby dungeon, probably for the last time for a little while all together. So let's enjoy this, gentlemen. JB.
Yes. Hello, Tim. Yes, it seems to be we will be here for last time because of, things we're not going to discuss on this podcast.
Yes.
Correct.
So that's a shame. But the Six Nations was, one game of the Six Nations was okay, wasn't
it? Good. Yeah, Super Saturday didn't really quite live up to the hype. How are you doing, Phil?
Hello, Tim. Yeah, very, very good.
In your England stash?
In my England stash, yeah.
Celebrating an England Six Nations Championship shouldn't be scoffed at.
Two England Six Nations Championships,
quite right, Phil.
To the Red Roses. England have had a pretty good end of season, haven't they? So European Champions Cup, European Challenge Cup, Six Nations. It's not looking too bad. You could say it's looking kind of rosy.
It is. What's the opposite of a downfall?
Oh,
upswing 2020.
Oh, hang on. No more.
No more.
As in Brian Moore, but we'll come to that later.
Well, do you know what? I just want to say one thing. As much as we've been marvelling at his play this season, Antoine Dupont. I was reminded, and I think they mentioned it in comms over the matches, Antoine Dupont basically cost France the Six Nations Championship.
Why? What's he done?
At the end of the France-England game, it had got to 79 minutes and France were close to their own line trying to see out the clock, 10 points ahead of England. And Antoine Dupont kicked the ball dead over the dead ball line, giving England a 5-metre scrum from which they won a penalty and scored 3 points. When there was 1 minute left, he thought the clock had gone dead.
Do you not remember this?
Yeah, the first game of the tournament, and that gave England a losing bonus point.
They gave England a losing bonus point.
Thanks to that losing bonus point, England won the championship. So, and we were reminded of this by James Primavesi on Twitter as well a couple of hours ago. And Antoine Dupont was, in my opinion, the best player of the tournament. He was unbelievably good all tournament, but that is probably a very good description of example of why France have got some incredible talent and they are so dangerous at times, but they also make kind of some basic errors and silly mistakes, like the tackling for both the Henshaw and the Stockdale tries, and Boutier's slap into touch. They are rapier sharp when they need to be going forward, but they're not the finished article and they also make some basic mistakes. And Dupont is as susceptible as everyone else in that French team at doing that.
They could be in a different place come 2 years. One of the biggest takeaways for me was France, that kit is so good, it will accommodate last week wearing white shorts and red socks in a sort of tricolour flag type kit, and this time wearing all blue, still looked absolutely beautiful.
Does look rather good, does look rather tasty.
And it's slightly evil as well because it's got Altrad Industries across the chest.
Yes. Now, Altrad Industries, they're the guys that manufacture those Iron Man suits, is that right?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean... Shall we just skip over the other games? I'd say skip over. Let's talk about them very briefly because it was awful. Everything was awful. Then we can save the actual good games to last rather than dwell. Or should we do it the other way around? How do you want to do it?
Well, yeah. You know, I think that's a good way to go because we need to respectfully mention the other games, but they don't, the nature of them, they didn't really deserve a great amount of time because they were very, very average. Albeit, it was a reminder that Super Saturday is best watched in a pub or a rugby clubhouse with beers, because then I don't think I'd have minded that the games were a bit average.
Yeah, no, you could have just chatted more during the first two games.
Yeah, and this is a real problem, isn't it? That when you're not allowed to... I mean, you are allowed to drink. You can drink at home, but that's not really the same thing, is it? When you make sport the centre of a sporting event, you're very rarely satisfied. So it doesn't really matter what sport it is. You can go watch the Indy 500, and that's all about taking crates of beer into a stand and watching cars go around in circles. No one really likes watching cars go around in circles. No one really likes going to horse racing, except for you get to wear nice jackets and get absolutely smashed all day long.
Oh, the darts. People going
darts!
To the darts.
Darts!
That darts is a vehicle for getting smashed in fancy dress.
The cricket. You're out in the sunshine. Totally. Lovely summer's
beer
day.
Beer snakes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, there are some people that keep scoring cricket. In fact, I know someone who keeps a score in cricket. So there are some other weird things that go on.
I have been to... I know you said one of your plans for 2020 was to go to more county cricket matches at Old Trafford.
Or a county cricket game.
Which you haven't been able to do. But I have been to a couple of county cricket games just to sit there through the day and do my work. Well, it's brilliant. Or read a book. And it's brilliant. And there are some old fellas that take a cricket scorebook along and keep score.
And away they go. Our mutual friend Pedder Jones used to keep score as a young man. Go to Old Trafford and keep score. Because they used to do it, right? So if you were to become a member of Lancashire Cricket Club, it gets cheaper the further away that you live, up to a maximum. So he had the low... Because he lives in Rhythin, he had the lowest tier of membership because he lived so far away.
Interesting.
I think it's changed now, but if you live next to the ground...
Yeah, so we live a mile or 2 miles away from...
We'd have to pay more, but that doesn't make sense, really, does it?
It's a bit perverse, isn't it?
Yeah, because I'm sure if you ask a United fan or a Liverpool fan, you have guys flying in from Korea, which, again, is... I don't understand the criticism of the so-called day trippers, because I think it's one of the finest compliments you can pay your city or indeed your sports team. But I'm sure they would say they'd want it the other way around, which is the guys that live around Old Trafford should get first dibs on tickets. But
anyway. Yeah.
So anyway, that's
anyway. Anyway. Yeah, so in short, Super Saturday probably would have been Super Saturday in a pub.
Yeah.
So it was mediocre first two games.
So one of the best Saturdays I had, I watched the first game in Didsbury in Rosso, an Italian restaurant, with a dear friend of mine, drinking their groanies, but watching it on the iPad before going across the road, and then watching the second game in a pub. That was a glorious day. So yes, back to the thing. It is better when you're drinking.
Just on the glorious days, I will reference Twitter again. Positive again. Chris Pritchard messaged us.
Hello, Chris.
At Rugby Podcast with him and four friends, of course, outdoors and distance responsibly, and they brought a TV. To the pub. So yeah, actually I think it might even be a computer monitor that they've managed to get an extension cable, and it's presumably streaming off one of their phones.
Perfect.
So that they could watch the rugby.
Love it. Good work.
That is great work.
That is outstanding work. Particularly that's necessary in Manchester, where you can't get any telly with rugby on in any pub. It's all like, they'd have non-league football over international.
They absolutely would.
Or they've got a dodgy Norwegian or Saudi Arabian stream of whatever football game is happening.
Yeah, why do they have to really battle for rugby to be on? Doesn't matter. It's a story for another day. So we started the day, didn't we, with breakfast and what turned out to be a New Zealand team run. Did anyone see that?
I've only watched the highlights of this. I was at Dun & Massey for my sins.
I think I would have stayed there, to be honest.
I can come clean about where I was now that I'm back.
Uh-oh. Shipping container. International waters.
Did you get rescued by the SBS?
Yeah, yeah. So I was abroad. I was in Greece. Yeah, you can hate me. Yeah, I'm awful. I was genuinely... I feel like...
How was Greece? Warm?
It was beautiful. It was perfect. It was 26 degrees, so you need to put sun cream on once a day. Which is the perfect amount, but it was absolutely glorious. And there was one day of solid rain when We just played cards and got hammered. So it was great.
Monopoly Go?
On the Wednesday. It was no.
Monopoly
like,
Deal.
The guys that were there. Well, this is the other thing. And people, I feel that, like this is a safe space where I can share things like this. Cause
yeah, because no one's listening.
You've got to know me over the years. So, but I felt really self-conscious about saying this. So I haven't seen my mum in months. She's living out there at the moment. And so I got to see her. And my brother went out there. And it's the only way I would have seen my brother.
Yeah,
it would have been impossible for you to see him.
I've seen him once in 2020, and I wouldn't have been able to see him again for goodness knows how long. So,
yeah, good.
So how with anyone slagging me off for going abroad? I'm glad I did.
Yeah, and actually, so you should, just because you have multiple properties across multiple continents and nations, you should be able to use them, Tim. Why shouldn't you? You worked hard for them.
Tell you what, your carbon footprint over lockdown, most people's has decreased over the last 6 months.
Oh, yeah, there was 2 trips to France.
Loophole Tim.
2 trips to France, trip to Greece. In fact, 2 trips to Greece.
Good effort.
I hope you're planting some trees on all those properties. Yeah,
of course.
So it's basically a New Zealand team run. Richie Munga is, I mean, he just looks awesome.
I've seen the tries. God, he looked good. But then the defence. So from what I saw, their young 10, Noah, was defending at 15 for quite a bit of it.
Yeah.
And it just seemed everything opened up.
I don't like that principle. I remember when... Where was Sippers playing when they did this with
fullback.
Him?
Fullback. Wasps, he
was
did it.
A Wasps?
I think they did it at Sale as well, didn't they? He was defending on the wing. Melbourne might have done it as well. It might have been at a few places.
I don't like this hiding. You need to go away and work on your weakness, not be hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I also think, you know, look at Richie Munger. There was a guy there who was doing great for Canterbury. He sort of bided his time. I wasn't sure he was as good as Beauden Barrett, who was at the time the best player in the world. He might actually be better. He's that good. But he had that chance to develop. And the Australian lads are like, right, we need you to play roughly as good as the best player in the world right now. Can you do that right now?
By the way, you're 20 years old.
Yeah.
First international start for a 10, for a 12, and a 13 has hardly played.
It doesn't seem likely to me. It just doesn't seem like it's going to happen. And they keep on trying it, and it was just difficult to watch.
Do you think that that Australian performance vindicates a little bit of what I was saying when I say this obsession with chucking the kids in and just win the next game?
Yeah, in this case it does. I mean, if you look at... just look at New Zealand. Well, they do so-called chuck the kids in. But I think you can be a kid and play on the wing.
But they do.
Like, Callum Clark's not an old guy, is he?
I feel like that New Zealand never would have done, because they bring them in a more intelligent way where they don't... Their 10, 12 and 13 were all... Well, 2 new starters and 1 Pettier who's got a handful of caps because of injuries, but he's still only a very young man. New Zealand never would have done that. They would have started one of them with experienced guys either side, and then a few weeks later they would have started another one and then gradually built it up. And this is to the point that we were making a few months ago on Leicester Tigers, where they were playing Team A and Team B, and Team A is not very good at all, and Team B was
woeful.
Just kids. And no one's learning anything from that situation because this Australia team has been on one end of a 40-odd point absolute beat down,
and the problem
they're going to learn nothing.
A further problem Australia have is their best players simply aren't very good, or if they are good, they're very, very good at one thing, but they're not complete players. And I'll give you the classic example of a player who just is not very good, and you're going to think I'm mental, but so be it. Marika Korobeti.
Now Korobeti does some stuff unbelievably,
like you can't coach it. He's naturally gifted. The running is amazing, but he can also leave the ball behind him. Like, literally leave the ball behind him. He's just not very good, but he's still one of their best players, and you put him on the field more out of hope than anything else. You're hoping that Korobeti can come up with some magic to get you a point here, or as he did against, it might have been Caleb Clark, where he made just an unbelievable tackle.
That was an unbelievable tackle. Well, he made another one on Richie Mwonga.
Yeah.
He put in 2 brilliant hits.
But that's not good enough. It's not good enough to have a guy who can be really, really good one day and the next day next minute, literally leave the ball behind
him. Well, let's give him the chance to grow, because that is what people used to say about Johnny May.
Yeah. I think Korobeti.
Korobeti's amazing.
I think Korobeti I would still have in the team It's just you've got to have a team of solid and dependable guys around him to facilitate his brilliance.
The week before he was awful in terms of, he was very good with Vaughan, he always is, but it's kind of like a dice throw. Like, you bring him on if you're losing and hope for the best. Then you've got, like we just spoke about the kids, and they've got a pack which I don't think are particularly good. I'm not a huge fan of who's the captain?
Hooper.
I just don't think he is up to the standard of other international back rows.
I think he is. I really rate Hooper.
I can't agree with that.
But he's in a pack that's going backwards.
Yeah. Look, is he very good? Yes, he is. Is he better than the New Zealand options for God knows how long? Would he get into the South African back row?
Very different. I'd argue that he's a better all-round player than Sam Kane, who's New Zealand's captain.
Yes.
And who's had a pretty poor season, but has played very well internationally.
And I think he's very good.
In a pack that's going forward internationally.
In fact, I think he's amazing. Maybe the best back row on earth at the things which you catch on camera, which are his little scampering runs. He's amazing at that. But what about everything else?
Turnover, tackling. I really...
His work rate is immense.
I think we're
already giving Australia more time than they deserve.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
We should be talking more about Richie Mwanga.
Richie
Mwanga was incredible. New Zealand won it at a canter. It was more like a training game, and that doesn't bode well for Bledisloe 4.
Is there any point in playing Bledisloe 4? Are they playing like
what are they going to learn
last
score that?
Wins or something? What's the what are the rules for it?
But I want to give a massive amount of credit, not for the quality of the game, but for the grittiness of the performance, something which Scotland have been lacking. Fair play, Gregor Townsend and his team.
Yeah.
I mean, this sort of confirms all of my worst fears about Wales.
Pivac.
Yeah. Pivac's not a bad coach. He just isn't. He's a coach which gets exactly the standard out of the players that the players are.
Well, he arguably overachieved with Scarlets
for a
good couple of years.
Also, I wonder if we are seeing a dry run now for Rob Baxter, a guy who's very successful in the club game, who, when he goes to the international game, you need results now. Today, where Rob Baxter and Rob Baxter, if you look at how he's done it, year by year, it gets incrementally better and better and better. Pivac took some time to get Scarlets to where they were, and it's a massive mental shift for Wales. That said, the reason it's a massive mental shift for Wales is because Warren Gatland understood what he had at his disposal was not all that. They were not a bunch of world-class players, and therefore he had to ram them into a game plan which would get the most out of them. Whereas now they've been asked to play a game plan which is Pivac's game plan, regardless of who he has available.
Mm.
And I expect there to be a lot more losses and a lot more heartache for Wales before they turn a corner, if indeed they ever do, because I suspect a few more losses and this guy might be gone.
So that was four losses on the bounce for Wales.
Yep.
That was comfortably the worst performance.
Of
those four defeats.
Yeah. And they lost at home to Scotland for the first time in 18 years in the Six Nations.
Yep.
Now, in Wales' defence, the conditions were absolutely awful. Well, and it made it a bit of a lottery.
The wind was bad.
The wind, and it started absolutely belting down halfway through the first half.
Did it?
Yeah. And the ball was very greasy.
Oh, and to be fair, do you remember, was it last year or the year? It might have been last February 2019, when England won away at Murrayfield in biblically bad conditions, and they needed that late Lewis Ludlam try to sneak past them.
Yeah. And Scotland are no mugs.
No.
I mean, Scotland indeed are the only team to beat France in this year's Six Nations.
And Jamie Ritchie and Hamish Watson are a serious pair.
And they were perfect for these conditions. And that was actually my biggest complaint about Wales, was the Scotland pack in particular adapted to the refereeing.
Yeah.
And the refereeing was pretty strict around the breakdown, not allowing anything if you weren't supporting your own body weight, and definitely not allowing any side entry into the rooks.
Yeah.
Scotland, Jamie Ritchie and Hamish Watson adapted to that brilliantly. The Welsh back row and the Welsh pack did not, and they gave away silly penalties time and time again.
So the thing which concerned me about this game, and watching it, I got more and more frustrated. Number one, Scotland were better in the scrums. I don't think there's much doubt about that.
Until about 65 minutes, when... Who was it that came on? Was it when Wyn Jones came on?
Yes. They started with France, I think.
They've started with Francis
and and Rhys Carey.
Yeah, Carey.
Yeah. And they are big boys. Ryan Lyon's a big boy. I mean, they're a big physical unit. Turns out the scrimmaging wasn't great, and that's disappointing because that's what you pick Thomas Francis for. That's what you pick Rhys Carey for, although he can carry as well. The lineouts were an absolute shambles.
The lineouts on both teams, from both sides.
Now people will blame the wind for this, right? And the wind is gusty. The secret to this is have the ball in the air for as short a period of time as you possibly can, because the longer it is in the air, the more that the wind gets taken. So if you're trying to shape the ball, okay. So what I mean by that, Tim knows exactly what I mean. You know, you want to sort of lob over the jumper in,
nice arc.
Yeah, shaping it in. It's not going to work. You need to drill it in, and if you're going to drill it in, you probably need to shorten your numbers. And I'll let them off to this degree, right? Which is, no matter what the conditions, always pick your best option, because you're better off going for your best option rather than going to contested option. So that if they manipulate the game, so they are contesting you, thinking you're going to go to the front ball, well, you're best off going to that ball anyway.
We need a special spin-off line-out pod, because you love it. These last couple of months, you absolutely love it.
Yeah, so, you know, they've obviously got... You know, so that, I know what they're trying to do, so I don't blame them for that. What I do blame them for, however, is not... Why didn't they shorten their numbers? You know, that would be that would be a pretty good idea. If you go into a five-man line-out, they can only lift one pod unless they stop...
Well, go back to that. Is it Einstein quote, the definition of stupidity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
Yeah.
But both teams did it.
Both teams did it.
And the professionals.
The one Wales, the Welsh try, Rhys Carey's try, came from Fraser Brown on his own 5 metre line out after he's just taken a knock and been down receiving treatment, trying to hit back ball, missing it spectacularly, and Wales scoop it up, and about five phases later they go under the post.
There's so many things you can do. You can put the nine at the front of the line. There's all these different options which you can build into your line outs. And for two teams at the height of their power, you know, this is as good as it gets in the northern hemisphere. For them not to be able to figure out wind is a joke.
Well, let's focus on a positive. Alan Wyn Jones became the most capped international player of all time when you put his Lions caps alongside his Welsh ones, going ahead of Richie McCaw.
Yeah. Ah, is that how they worked out?
149.
Yes, I did think... I saw that graphic come up. I was like, that's not right. He doesn't have 149. He does with his Lions cap, though, doesn't he?
He does.
Which definitely counts.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. You'd argue they might count double.
Yeah, it's a funny one, this, because in the NFL, they don't count playoff appearances.
Oh, really? You just count the regular season?
They have just a regular season. And I do... Yeah, because if they weren't playing Lions, they would be playing an international, I guess.
And they do have separate stats for playoffs, don't they, when it gets to that? They'll say, oh, he's got 3 out of 5 wins in the playoffs.
Or... Do you know what else they have? Separate pay structures for playoffs, too. So there's a pot of money for the playoffs, which we don't have in rugby, but luckily the money isn't that much of a problem yet. So if you're earning $20 million for this year, when you get to the playoffs, you don't still get a continuation of your contract. I think you get a fixed amount per game.
Nice.
Well, not if you're making a business decision. Not if your contract's up. In which case, you might want to say, I think I'm going to be getting another $20 million deal next year in free agency. I'm not playing these bloody games.
I'm not going to blow my knee.
Yeah, forget this. For how much? No way. So that's just a thought.
But yeah, Alan Wynn, unreal achievement. In the second row as well. I know second rows are generally very robust individuals, but they're also sticking their head into ugly places a whole career.
Do you know what made me think about Alan Wynn this week, kind of it at least, was the Tom Youngs quote from Eddie. He said, oh, well, he's got 100. You think
Ben Youngs.
Sorry, Ben Youngs. I think he can get 150. It's like, no one's going to get 150. And then I thought, bloody hell, actually, it can be done.
It is possible.
Yeah. And if he's going to play to the Lions, you'd expect him to exceed, maybe. I mean, how far can he go?
Well, so he turned 35 last month. You'd expect him to play next year, at least for Wales. Whether whether he's still at the level to get to play for the Lions is a question mark for me.
I think he'd be at the level to go on the Lions tour. Maybe, maybe on the
midweek Lions tour.
No,
they don't count as tests. So no.
So it's only the three tests.
So good. Alan Wynne-Jones has nine Lions caps, which is three tests in 2009, three tests in 2013, and three tests in 2017.
That's amazing.
That is incredible.
Yeah, if you can get three more tests. I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't. You pair him up with...
It's possible.
Well, Marrow, it's Marrow plus one, isn't it?
Marrow and James Ryan?
Or Alan Wynne?
Possibly Alan Wynne.
I mean, it depends how you want to play it. Marrow could easily play at six.
He could do.
Up against South Africa, maybe you would go Alan Wynne.
Yeah, the question is, right, do you want to out South Africa, South Africa? Because that's what you're doing when you put Morrow at six. You're saying, we're going to go into a big physical confrontation.
Well, when you go back to 97 and you think of Living with Lions, that was one of the things... Or I don't know whether it was actually in the documentary or whether they said it afterwards, but...
The Martin Johnson thing.
The Martin Johnson thing. Is that they want... they having physically intimidating specimens was important when you play South Africa.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
Psychologically as much as functionally.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he does three more tests. He's certainly at the level where he could do three more tests right now if you're picking the team tomorrow.
I don't know. I just a question mark over that. Just because. In the last year, he was definitely at that level in the World Cup.
Yes.
Which is over 12 months ago now.
Yep.
Since then, I've not seen him play any club rugby. No. I have seen him beat Italy and then lose four consecutive games in the Six Nations as captain.
Yes.
So there is a question mark in my mind as to whether he can still do it at this age with the amount of miles on the clock.
But going back to Michael Hooper, it's another question of, is that because of what's around him or... coaches will understand that. But to connect the two. But going back to Scotland, I just thought there was real grit and the defensive rear guard is not something that Scotland have... You know, based particularly Gregor Townsend hasn't based his rugby around, but they've got a real steeliness.
Yeah, they did, and they went for the reverse Finsanity plot.
Yeah, classic.
Classic reverse Finsanity. Take him off.
Yeah.
So if you think about the Corabetti analogy that I made before, which is, you know, you want a gamble to win. Well, they took their gamble early, and then they bought him off.
Yeah.
And it seems to work quite well until Hastings went off.
Hastings went off, and Scott Steele came on to the wing, and Hogg moved up to...
Yeah, that's weird.
Blair Cowan went to 15, Hogg moves up to 10, and Langer stayed at 12.
Yeah, so Lang, right, is a fly half. Colhoun's fans will say, no, he's not, he's a 12. No, he is a fly half. I've seen him play fly half, he came up as a fly half in RGC. He's definitely a fly half. I guarantee you that. He does play 12 for Harlequins, but I was amazed that they didn't move him into 10 because he's a natural 10.
Well, who would have gone 12?
That's a great question.
Yeah,
and that's
but
why.
13. I guess it's because you've got two playmakers.
Kinghorn.
Kinghorn maybe 30. I've never seen him play there. I'm sure he could do a job.
I'm sure, has he not played 10 at some level? Kinghorn club level. Anyway,
he plays most of his club stuff at 15. Yeah. But I don't watch an enormous amount of Edinburgh.
But fair play, as you've already said, Phil, the first time they've won away in Wales in 18 years.
Peter Horn.
Peter
Horn, Kinghorn's brother. George Horn, Peter Horn and King Horn, the three Horn brothers.
Yeah. It's like the Starks and the Carl Starks. They're very different. They're very different.
But again, we've probably given that game as much time as it deserved, other than saying fair play Scotland.
Yeah, well,
yeah, Scotland. Great result, Scotland. And Scotland building nicely. This is a good team. And arguably, I say building nicely, peaking at exactly the wrong time for a World Cup. But who knows?
Classic.
Who knows?
Classic. So, Wales finished with 8 points.
Pathetic. Absolutely pathetic.
Scotland got, 14? Was it? Well, it might have been 12.
More than Wales. Scotland got more than Wales.
A lot more than Wales.
Significantly more than Wales. Anyway, it was, a good performance
Scotland
from
14,
them.
Wales 8.
Yeah.
So Wales got the wooden spoon, excluding Italy.
Because
you might as well exclude Italy.
Well, let's talk about excluding Italy now. So England were good, I guess. I mean, you can't really judge England much on this.
Do you know what? For everything people were saying about Ben Spencer, and I understand it, you've got to say, you can't argue. If you were just knew nothing about any of the players and just were sat down in that stadium and watched the game, you'd go, wow, that scrum half's a bit. He's a bit good, isn't he?
Ben Youngs, yeah.
He does do this, though.
He does. You're right. He has one game in six where he is world-class. He looks incredible, running tries in for fun, beating defenders. And he did it in this game. And he's done it. It almost doesn't seem to matter who the team is, because I've seen him do it against New Zealand. I've seen him do it against South Africa, where he made Peter Steph, the toy best player in the world, look like a fool.
Yes.
But then he has his other games and his basketball pass missed three straight into touch and all the rest of it, slower on the ball, meaning the 10 so, got no time.
Do you remember we had this, the big debate about why Owen Farrell has dropped Ben Spencer effectively? Right? that's how I'll summarise it, so you remember. So I did look into this a little bit more. Not about Owen Farrell dropping Ben Spencer.
Okay.
Why are these lads not making it? And I say these lads, Spencer and of course Robson, and the feedback I get from almost everyone is they're just not loud enough for international rugby, and I think that's such a weird thing to say, but that is the feedback I get from players, from people who played with them, like across the game, they're just not loud enough.
So Eddie has very clear ideas in certain positions that you can tell, like the back row, for example, of certain roles he wants fulfilled. So yeah. Maybe that's just something he's got in his head.
I do know, and I remember a slightly different standard, but when I was a very young man playing at Sedgley, the criticism of me early days was not loud enough. And it was something I really, really had to work on. And you end up being kind of one of the loudest guys on the pitch, and you end up, like, as I played most of my senior rugby as a wing or fullback, you end up calling the line and being incredibly loud. But it's not an easy thing. To some individuals, me included, it doesn't come naturally.
So one of the things I heard was about gun safety. Have I told you this before?
Gun safety,
like literally firearm safety.
Yeah,
and it's quite a good way to think of things. And it is in the military, particularly the American military, when you're handling a gun, you talk yourself through it aloud so everyone can hear you.
They don't call it a gun, by the way. It's a rifle or a pistol or things like that.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So it's a rifle. So if you're handling your rifle, say things aloud because otherwise you might not do them. So, and I think it's no different with rugby. So, if you're pointing at a man and saying you're going to tackle him, you better tackle him because you're now accountable to tackling him.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be stood somewhere, you better tell someone that you're stood somewhere, or you might not do it. As soon as you're quiet, you get less accountable.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And it is really important when you're making split second decisions at this level of rugby. You have to communicate what you're doing to the man inside you and the man outside you.
And think how much longer, how many more games you might have played in your body-wrecked career, Phil, if you'd have shouted, "Your man," a bit more.
Not my man!
Ben Youngs kind of did that. One of the few blots on his copybook in this game where he made a half-hearted attempt to tackle Jake Pelledri, who then ran into the corner.
There are some guys, if you decide not to tackle them, I think I'll give you a pass. You know, if you know for a fact you can't tackle him, that's almost professional, isn't it? That's using your professional acumen to say, no, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I let him in.
He's got proper Bristolian farmer strength, hasn't he?
Ploughing the fields of White Ladies Road.
Yeah. You're not... Italy aren't going to miss Sergio now.
No.
Well, they'll miss him.
Yeah,
because he's been talismanic for so long. They'll miss the Sergio in his prime, and they'll.
Yeah, there's other things that Sergio could do. Some of the deft offloads and touches and the link play.
But they're fundamentally useless on
to be honest, it doesn't really matter for Italy.
No, it's wasted actually. Yeah, all the deft offload. I mean, it's like serving truffle oil at McDonald's. It's just what would be the point?
Well, Italy could have Kieran Reid in his prime. Dwayne Vermaelen in his prime, and another amazing back. What's his name? Pickermalls in his prime as their three back rows. It's not actually going to make any difference.
No, it's going to make no difference whatsoever. They're a lost cause, I think. I found out something quite interesting on the weekend, just as we're on Ben Youngs. As I say, objectively, he's not the best, this, that, and the other, but we've already done Ben Youngs. Who has the record for the fastest pass in the world?
I think, hold on.
And what is the speed?
Is it Willie Hines?
It is not Willie Hines.
Is it Peter Stringer?
It is not Peter Stringer.
Is it Dan Robson?
It is not Dan Robson. You're very close, though.
Ben Vallecott.
Very close.
Joe Simpson?
Correct.
Interesting.
It's been clocked in at 46 miles an hour.
Is that fast? No. Well, it must be fast if it's the fastest passenger.
Well, allegedly, that's what's in the Guinness in the Guinness World Record book.
So me and Joe Simpson are both in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Which is astonishing. I found that out because I wanted to know how far the wind could take the ball if it was in the air for two seconds. So how fast is it going one way and how fast is it going the next way? So I quickly Googled it and up popped a little stat about Joe Simpson and how fast the ball is. So that's a nice little trivia question. So Joe Simpson, I wonder if anyone can beat that, because he's a scrum half and he can pass pretty quickly.
He can pass pretty quickly. I don't know. I'd love to see it.
Yep, there we go.
Maybe instead of playing actual rugby games next year, because... Well, it's not banned, but the leagues are not going to continue. Yeah, you could just have scrum half paths.
Yeah, we could do like a
kick.
Yeah, like individual skill contests. Yeah, like turn it into like you could get tighter props doing deadlift.
Yeah, now you're talking.
Or find some way of like measuring the force on a scrum machine and seeing who can exert
the
most
BT
force.
Sport, we've got that with the smashometer.
Yeah.
So just on England. To be fair to them, to go from where they were World Cup finalists to losing that, it would be easy for them to go into their shell. They've really kicked on. I think it's massively encouraging. The domestic game, despite all the COVID and stuff, seems to be in a great situation because of Exeter and Bristol winning their respective competitions. And I think they're just going to continue onwards because the talent that they've got available to them coming through now is...
I think you say kick on. I think there has been some change, but actually there was most of the names on that team sheet were World Cup final, the World Cup final sign, but for a couple of changes, and a couple of those were injuries rather than selections.
Ollie Thorley's now an England player, which is great. Tom Dunn is it now?
Have you seen that video?
Yeah, it's
Tom
lovely.
I can't watch it because I've got a feeling it's going to be emotional.
It's just brilliant.
It's not so emotional. It's not like the Razzie Erasmus talking about Mpimpi. Have you seen that video?
I don't want to see it.
No, I don't like that.
That's one that really gets you. So the Tom Dunn one is just him talking to his family back home, and obviously it's he's got his England cap on that he's just been presented with, and he's waiting to find out if they won the Six Nations Championship. But yeah, it's lovely. The Mpimpi one is from that South African documentary
Chasing the Sun.
That's the one.
I've not seen this. I've heard of it.
And it's a clip of Razzie Erasmus talking about the fact that on the numbers of the South African jerseys, the players you'll love this.
I can't wait.
It sounds quite Stuart Lancaster sort of thing. They were asked to give them a load of photographs of family members, which they then collaged together in the number of every individual shirt. So they had their friends and family, they had their loved ones' pictures on the shirt. I don't think it was during the World Cup. It was for anyway, but whatever. Mpimpi only had pictures of himself because he has no family.
Really?
And Razzie Erasmus just loses it when he's explaining this story. It's really, really
oh God,
beautiful, amazing, and really...
Poignant.
Yeah, really poignant.
And quite dark.
So what you're saying is Stuart Lancaster should have won a World Cup?
Yes.
If it wasn't for Sam Burgess?
Correct.
Sam Burgess, bloody
ruining
hell.
Ruining everything.
Everything.
So this game, before we... I think we should finish on it pretty soon, but England looked rusty. England would have... I imagine have been a bit sharper had they have had a game last week, which we'll go on to. It was never in doubt in my mind that they were going to get a bonus point win. They comfortably got the bonus point win. They did enough.
Yeah. I tell you, it was in doubt. Just going back to the debuts, it was in doubt Tom Dunn was going to come on.
I know.
That was like the most nerve-wracking part of the entire game for me.
I was, because they were talking about it in comms, and Flatman would like, because they joked he was on and then he wasn't on, and then the clock is running down.
Yeah, because after that scrum, there was a very good chance the ball stays in play for 90 seconds.
Yeah, yes, yeah. I'm so glad he got on. And he actually got stuck in as well. He had a few tackles to make in, and a couple of carries.
Well, something.
Yeah, in that last period. So I'm really pleased he got on.
Can I say something I was really pleased about?
Yes.
Oh, well, we haven't mentioned Johnny Hill as well, who got his debut.
Yeah. Got a yellow card in his debut.
Got a yellow card on debut.
Yes, he did, didn't he? It was his debut.
Yeah, debut. Yeah. On debut.
That we've got. Oh, he started on his debut, did he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got, like, that beard. I think we need to have a word now. I mean, it was the novelty has worn off for me, and it's now getting like Deliverance levels. Yeah. You kind of want to see him in a pair of dungarees.
Do you remember when they used to do music for players that scored? Like, so Scotland did it first. Like, you just pick your tune.
Yeah,
the Deliverance music would be quite cool.
The dueling banjos.
Yeah, should he score? that's his first cap.
Yeah.
So he's
his first appearance in an England squad.
I'm blown away by that. I thought
what a few weeks for him.
Yeah.
What a few weeks for Henry Slade. Scores in three consecutive games.
Yeah.
Final England. Six Nations Championship victory try. Yeah.
Three trophies in three weekends. Three trophies in three weekends.
And he's devilishly handsome.
Easy as rugby. I did think he was wasted at 12, actually. Not because he can't play it or anything, just I didn't think the game came to him.
Yeah, the whole game was very stopped. Yeah. It looked like two teams that have not played properly. Like Razzie said when the Springboks declined the Rugby Championship, you need 400 minutes of real rugby.
Yeah.
And there's an element of that is getting the individuals the match fitness, which these players will have, and there's an element of that which is getting them the experience of working together, new combinations, new line-out lifting, all of it. And yeah, a lot of players didn't stand out.
No.
I did one other thing worth mentioning is England did it again with a first 5 minute try with a pre-planned move, which is a lovely move with the decoy being Mako and Billy. Mako with the soft hands to Faz picking the line. They've done it time and time again. But then the disappointing thing is Eddie, or whoever it is, skills coach Mitchell or whoever, is preparing these pre-planned set plays early on in the game that they can execute brilliantly and score tries off time and time and time and time again. But then when things break down, England seem to struggle a little
bit for
ideas. But maybe that's just me reading too much into this game and the rustiness of the players.
Yeah, I expect England to look very powerful after 8 weeks of togetherness.
Yeah.
8 weeks. I don't know how many weeks.
Another 3 or 4 weeks.
Someone I can't remember the name right now, and I don't have my phone on me. But someone tweeted to at Rugby Podcast just to highlight that after we were talking about the incredible shape that Mark Wilson's in, we need to highlight the incredible shape that Tom Curry is in. He is massive. He is absolutely massive.
Sam Coburn.
Thank you. I think it's Coburn.
#backrowbeef. Tom Curry, there was a picture of him the other day, because he's got his like long lockdown hair, hasn't he?
He looks great.
He looks good.
His hair looks a bit like he's trying to be a poor man's Ben Foden.
Ooh.
But his rig, enormous.
About it, right? Like, people say, sale South Africans, it's not great for the English game. Well, it is if you're trying to breed flankers, because if you've got to fight these South Africans every bloody day in training, you're going to need to up your game. You know, it's not easy to beat up Jean-Luc Dupree or Dan Dupree or John O'Rourke.
Yeah. Stacking Dupree's is his
hobby.
Is his training session.
Yeah. The interview with, I think, I can't remember if it was with Tom Curry or Ben Curry, actually, during lockdown, but basically they both went and lived back at the family home during lockdown, set up a gym at home, and whichever one of them it was talking about the other said that on the odd occasion they'd sort of one the other one would come into the kitchen sweating and he'd go, what have you been doing? Oh, I just went and did some more weights. What? Right, I'm going. so they've both come back out of lockdown enormous.
Well, I know I've said this before, right, and I'll say it again. If you ask anyone in Sale, who is the best player? Who do you really rate? They all say Ben Curry. You go, well, what about Tom Curry? Oh, yeah, he's really good too. He's really good. So, they're both pretty good. Why Ben can't get in the England team, I do not know. but they're both really good.
I agree. I don't know why Ben... So Tom in the England team, you can't have Ben, but you can have Tom Willis, Underhill, Lewis Ludlam, who are all...
Jack Willis.
Sorry, Jack Willis, yeah. Not Tom Willis.
But did Jack Willis...
Didn't play.
Did he just not get a pick?
Travelling reserve.
Yeah, not in the matchday squad. But yeah, but Ben Curry surely is a better replacement for Tom Curry than Lewis Ludlam.
You would have thought,
or
wouldn't you?
Ben Earl. I mean, I know they all do slightly different things, but Eddie's not Eddie's picking them to do the same thing.
Well, yeah, if you've got defined roles.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've got no idea.
I find that confusing. But I've said it before, I'll say it again. I do trust Eddie totally. I just can't work out the reasoning behind it.
Maybe it's just to keep people motivated. I don't know.
The final thing I would say that's a big positive was we had our major fears about the kit being really ill-fitting because the photographs were not good, but they clearly they got it tailored a bit to the players. It looked all right.
No, I'm not with you there, Tim.
It wasn't baggy in all the wrong places like some of those pictures.
It wasn't great.
Who took his shirt off? Who was struggling?
Sam Underhill.
Underhill. Yeah.
Looked great.
Sam Underhill does look great. Not quite as defined as Wilson.
No.
But look great.
But the shirts don't look great.
I thought they looked all right.
I thought they looked okay. I do think they need to do
not good enough, right?
Something with the... There's some baggy bits around the shoulders. I can't quite work out...
The size of these guys' shoulders. I mean, how you make them baggy is beyond me. I mean, it must be really difficult. That's an engineering triumph in itself.
To get baggy shoulders.
Yeah. I mean, you've got some of the most marketable bodies... In world sports, your kit that you put on these players should look remarkably good. And if it doesn't, you've done something horribly wrong. Horribly wrong.
It's a fair point. So, yeah, well done, England. On the Six Nations Championship.
Yeah.
Now, the only game that I really enjoyed all weekend.
Well, how about, because... We talked about the English game being really good. How about we keep the amazing game on ice for a couple of minutes,
yep.
And just quickly get into the fact that English rugby, and I think English and Welsh, I think Wales Rugby Union have separately made a similar decision,
yep.
Where all rugby at in the RFU's case below level 2, which is the Championship, there's going to be no league rugby this whole season. So until September 2021, there will be no league rugby.
So my attitude on this has changed quite a lot since Friday night. So on Friday night, the RFU kind of snuck out a press release, I guess, or a little memo. No, it was an email, actually.
It was an email to members. There was no press release that went with it.
Yeah, right.
There was no press conference. There was no one put forward to answer questions. It was an email to members on a Friday night before Super Saturday. So you could argue, and it looks like they were trying to bury bad news.
Yes. Just like the Department of Transport on September 11th or whatever it was. Good day to bury bad news.
Wasn't it the London bombings, was that?
What was the name? Mary
2007.
Something.
2007. Anyway, let's not get into that.
Mary something. Anyway, I'll look that up. So that's what they did. And so I got this message sent to me. Obviously, I was gutted because, in my mind, what that says is no rugby this year. It doesn't really mean
that's
that.
How it read.
Yes, that's how it read. That's definitely how it read.
Cancel adult competitive leagues for the 2021 season.
Yeah. Now, that's not what it means. What it means is that the competitive leagues won't be going ahead this year. And if you think about it, that kind of does make some sense because promotion relegation might not be the fairest, and you might
get a hard half season.
Yeah. Like a team that doesn't deserve it going up and a team that doesn't deserve it coming down. So you could get that. On the other hand, right, it is not good enough to put out a press release. No, sorry, not put out a press release on a Friday with the information that it said, but with no thought about what is replacing the league structure.
I cannot get my head around this.
No.
And I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that rugby lately, there's been a lot of this, unfortunately, where rugby union had done a terrible job at communicating
the RFU
with its stakeholders.
I mean, there's no two ways about it now. They are a absolute farce. The way they've handled the community game, this might surprise you. But I have a begrudging admiration to trade unions. And the reason that I do, right, is because I think there's a really important point in society in general that you're able to defend the indefensible. And I think that they do that really, really well. But that it's an important thing to do. If you are defending the indefensible, at least someone can come and make an argument as to why what you're doing is so bad or why your argument is...
Yeah, and branching that out to our judicial system, it's an amazing job that defence lawyers do.
Exactly, same thing.
Defending people who are banged to rights and have done something awful, because that's the cornerstone of a...
Everything.
...of a fair society and everyone being equal under the law.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally agree with that.
It's vitally important. The RFU, right, I was discussing this with a good friend of mine who's a director of rugby in a different club. He goes, yeah, but they've got scientists and they're listening to... Well, get different scientists. Get scientists which back up what you want to do, because that is your job as an advocate of the game. If it's wrong, well, then that will come out in the wash when with people arguing, but don't just toe the line.
And not getting into it. There's plenty of examples of people picking scientists they want to...
I'll find you a scientist. If you want a scientist that will agree with what we say, we either pay him enough or we just find out who's saying what, get them on board. It is not difficult. Right? They're meant to be advocates for the bloody game, and they couldn't be doing a worse job. They are going to put up... What are we calling them now? The Hungry 13.
Hungry 13.
Hungry 13 managed to get one game cancelled. Right, the RFU have cancelled the whole season for every game in the land, and there's no accountability whatsoever. They've got rid of literally hundreds of staff, thousands of hours worth of community coaching, and there will be no comeuppance whatsoever. You know, they might have priorities, but their priorities are 100%, number one, arse covering for those at the top, which is why they're so into laws and rules and regulations and following and being seen to do the supposed right thing. And then second to that would be revenue. So we're asked to support the national team and get excited about Ben Youngs's new boots for his 100th game. I can't put on my boots now. Well, by the time I put on my boots, it'll be about 9 months since my last competitive game.
If I'm lucky.
So my message to them is, get your act together, go and find someone to advocate for the... advocate for the game. Your job is to get the game played. That's it. Next weekend, there's a good chance that I'll be playing Rugby League. A proper full-contact game of Rugby League, because that has been played.
Is it?
Yes. Oh. That's the big winner out of this.
Actually, no, it's not anymore.
Oh, no, because of lockdown.
Because of lockdown. But it was due to be.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah. Again, if... something comes in above the RFU. This is I'm totally with you, JB. If something comes in above, like in this case, the government, and says that can't happen, you can't blame the RFU for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are a union for the clubs. They are trying to do the best for the clubs. Exactly. And if someone above them says you can't do that for this reason and this reason, fair enough. But I'm totally with you on that.
They keep saying, oh, well, we phoned the Department of Sport and Culture or whoever the hell it is. Well, what did you say? You know, what did you do? Did you do anything? Or do you just take orders? And what arguments did you go equipped with? How did you handle it? You know, nothing has been made public whatsoever. They're an absolute disgrace. And the sooner they all disappear, the better, actually. I would like to see someone form up a new union now.
And there is an element, by the way, just taking gyms, for example, and I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but I would have thought... I just feel sorry for people that have spent a shed load of money on gyms and CrossFit boxes and things like that, making their place COVID secure.
Oh, yeah.
All the money they've spent on that. And then I would have thought that trying to encourage people to live healthy lifestyles might have a number of benefits,
yes.
Very poignant ones at the minute. And again, so trying to find a way that what can we do? And going back to your point about they didn't come up with an alternative, this was the bit that did my head in on Friday, and when I thought about it over the weekend. Why they didn't come in going, well, this is what we can do.
Yeah.
Like, here's a glass half full. Or it just seemed like they gave an empty glass.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. Oh, yeah, we kind of given up. We don't really know what to do. They're just so incompetent. It's not even incompetent. They're so timid. There seems to be no fight about them whatsoever. And hey, give them a serious problem like diversity within the RFU management, and they're all over it. They're busy sending emails to their staff saying check your privilege. But when it comes down to actually what they're meant to be doing, when it's not some performative role for Bill Sweeney, they're absolutely fucking useless. There's no other way to put it. I'm just trying to think of. Oh yeah. Anyway, so now we have established that they're absolutely useless, unless anyone else wants to add any more useless to it.
Useless at communication.
Yes.
No. Useless in general. In general, because they should have had something like. So my league, is not ran by the RFU. It's not an RFU league. It is a Lancashire league, right? And although I do not want to play the tournament that they have proposed, at least they have got options. Mm-hmm. And this is a bunch of guys who are, they just do it basically because they like doing it. And they've come up with an option. The RFU have not got a secondary option. That's unacceptable.
Well, I do remember a time. I remember going to watch. I used to play mini rugby at Newbury, and I would go along and watch the first team game on a Saturday afternoon in the days when there was no league structure. And it was, we've already talked about the merit table. It was just fixtures. You'd have this game, that game. There was the county championship that occasionally Berkshire would have a game. I remember Cornwall coming with coach loads of people for a game, a county championship match. And so there was all this structure. And what I woke up with on Saturday was thinking, do you know what? Actually, it's not that there's no rugby. That's not what the RFU meant. That's how they made it sound. But actually, this is an opportunity. Sod it, we don't need them to tell us what to do. This is a chance for, the local club, nearest club to us, Broughton Park, has a really rich history. It used to have England internationals and stuff. This is a chance for it to rekindle some rivalries with Manchester Rugby Club and Wilmslow and all these old rivalries that have lasted through the years.
And that's exactly the point I was going to make, which is this is a incredible opportunity for forward-thinking people in clubs, like myself, to quickly invent your own tournament. I mean,
JB Cup.
JB Cup 2.0.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to the JB Cup. The administrators disappeared. I think they even folded the website.
It's just a handle.
For instance, the Northwest has got some grand old teams. Sedgley Park isn't a grand old team, it's just a good team. But like Preston Grasshoppers would be one.
Waterloo. Yeah.
Waterloo is a grand old team.
Yeah, Waterloo. I mean, Waterloo could easily play against LSH and Birkenhead Park and West Park and
New Brighton.
Good, I mean, these team. Are good clubs. This is that is a league I'd be interested in knowing about week in, week out.
I used to love playing at Waterloo.
It's class, isn't
because
it?
Of the history there. And the tiny clubhouse with the reserved chairman, first team coach,
captain,
parking spaces.
And let me take you back to the very first rugby that happened during lockdown when the New Zealand Aotearoa tournament started, and how much that caught our imagination because it was just focused around the rivalries of those teams within New Zealand. And if you think about that on a regional or local or city-wide level across England, I think there's a great opportunity to have something meaningful, fun, that connects emotionally with people, that gets, again, this is all based on what we're allowed to do, but gets clubhouses full of people that are interested in rugby
This is your problem, Tim.
The league structure.
Right? Your problem is, we might well get back to playing. And although some of these clubs are basically, well, there's fields. They're a little building with a field.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan,
turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I guess no one's allowed to watch it because it's sport. I mean, it'd be ironic, wouldn't it? If you could go and watch Broughton Park, but you couldn't watch Sale Sharks.
Yeah, but that just... If we're getting back to playing, surely there can be...
Non-league football has crowds.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Does it?
I
don't know how you stop someone walking their dog.
I don't know,
Around Didsbury, around the fields.
I know over the summer, multiple times, I went and watched cricket at the local cricket club and had a beer, sat outside in the sunshine at my local cricket club. And there might have been 50 people around the whole of a cricket field.
I've got ambitions on an inner M60 tournament or South Manchester tournament. So maybe Tock H, Broughton Park, Burnage,
Broughton Rugby Club.
Broughton and Moor, the other side of the Moor,
they're north. It depends if what you do it. They're North Manchester. Or
I mean,
Salford,
Broughton could have a right good scrap against De La Salle. I would be interested to find out.
So this is it. So we'd love to know. We'd love to know if there are already plans in place. If not, that would be the message. Just start making phone calls to your local clubs. Here's an example. Maybe and the lockdown might affect this for the next month or so, but. You know, maybe there might come a time, if the last few weeks you'd been doing this, you could have joint training sessions in COVID-secure situations.
Don't think I'm
not all this, Tim. So you could have joint training sessions in COVID-secure arenas, and you might happen to fall into a game-type structure for 15 minutes, of course.
Exactly 15 minutes.
Only the 15 minutes.
Maybe, I don't know, 4 15-minute blocks. Maybe. I don't know.
Only the 15 minutes, obviously,
absolutely
JB.
Absolutely right. Otherwise, it'd be irresponsible. 16 minutes, everyone dies. Or gets arrested. In a way, kind of quite looking forward to it. Because if you can... it depends what happens. If we get put in a league with people who I deem to be worse than us, I'm not going to be happy.
And it depends what type of rugby it is.
Yeah, that's another big one. That is another big one.
Like, the fact is, as you said, were it not for lockdown, you could have gone and played a full contact game of rugby league this weekend.
Yeah, and that's what I was planning to travel to Wigan.
And yet rugby union, you could have done a structured touch, and that would have been it.
It's ridiculous. I hate touch with the passion. I mean, I that's not to say I don't appreciate touch players and touch is own sport, but not as a replacement for my sport. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
We'll have a chance to talk about this again, but the comms once more. Did rugby union,
but just remember,
no favours.
Just remember that, RFU, when you're punishing Chris Robshaw and co. They cancelled one game. You've just cancelled a whole season. So,
yeah, well, I do want to touch on that.
Yes,
the Hungry 13 little bit.
Just a second. There's some lead buzzing at the moment. Can you just fiddle with that?
Cool.
Shut it.
There you go, that's gone.
Is it gone?
Yeah.
Oh. Is it back?
No, it's quieter. That's fine.
Okay.
Hungry 13, fire. Go.
Hungry 13, so they got charged, when was it? Was it Wednesday or Thursday? So they've now been charged by the RFU. I find this really interesting. I don't actually have a massive problem with the RFU bringing this charge because, I've said it before, rugby at the moment is really important for clubs and unions' finances because everyone is massively struggling. This was a game that would have got TV revenue in... and it got obviously cancelled because of some dull decision making. Let's just put it like that.
And some lying. Well, alleged.
But they're meant to be lying. That's
alleged lying. Which
I would lie for either of you two. I wouldn't think. I wouldn't even think twice about it.
But I'm actually now. So let's move on from the outrage. Either way, I'm actually interested to see where this goes because so they've been charged under RFU rule. 5.12, which is, I won't read the full rule, but they've been charged with conduct prejudicial to the interests of the union and or the game. And so that sparked something in me, which was, I remember that rule getting invoked and someone getting charged on this before.
Was it Cipriani?
It was Cipriani.
Yeah,
the 2018.
The drink.
In Jersey.
Yeah.
Oh, Jersey.
Golden wrists.
Now, what was he charged? He was charged for... Undervaluing his wrists, wasn't it? Yeah.
Platinum wrists would be correct. Yeah. So he was charged with this rule as well, which was strange at the time, and there is a bit of a contradiction here, because, and that he wasn't, I mean, I guess he was operating on behalf within the bounds of a club who operate under the banner of the RFU, but he certainly wasn't on England duty or anything like that.
You're not allowed to have fun after a pre-season match.
No, yeah, he was on a piss of a team building piss up after a pre-season game.
Who do these people think they are?
Anyway, he got charged with it, and he got basically let off with a slap on the wrist. He was found guilty, but there was no sanction brought against him. And it's interesting to see where this goes, because there's no specific sanctions under 5.12. They can, in theory, charge them with anything. They can give them a ban, they can give them a fine, they can suspend them, they can do what they want.
Yeah, I mean,
they could gunge them or dunk them if they wanted to.
There you go, that'd be all right. No, I reckon that it should be like, you know, when in American, sort of teenage shows, you know, some parent catches their kid smoking, so they make them smoke a whole packet. Actually, they should just you're not allowed to leave until all of this is gone,
like locker room locking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
no, but it's a hungry 13, so maybe it would be eating a load of Italian food.
We've got to eat our way out.
You've got to eat your way out,
and they could do it.
Eat your body weight in garlic bread.
And I would, maybe
some TV money for the union as well.
Yeah, I'd watch it. I'd pay for that.
I would definitely watch that.
Yeah, like that that Japanese show. Do you remember Clive James used to have a show on a Sunday night?
Crikey, I do. And the Bee Gees walked off it.
Oh no, that's Clive Anderson.
Oh, no, hang on, who's Clive James?
Clive James is an Aussie guy, but he used to have this show. And there was always a Japanese TV show called Endurance that they always used to show a clip of.
Yes.
And it was just Japanese people doing it.
This is before we could all watch Takeshi's Castle, wasn't it?
Yes, before that. But yeah. it was darker and more. Yeah, it was like they'd have to go in a bath.
Sort of thing you could put on TV before YouTube.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, that was really novel. I remember it now.
So just maybe just put them through a load of trials like that. You can either pay a massive fine, have a huge ban, or you can have something we can televise, which is a bit humiliating.
So if the RFU do that, my respect for them would increase massively.
Yeah, all is forgiven if they do that.
Yeah. Well, maybe not all, but...
I don't know how I... Yeah, I mean, it might be increased slightly. I'm interested to see how the RPA handle this. Will they be given them representation? Will they, you know, what support do they get?
Well, the RPA is for Premiership players, which doesn't account for all of the people involved.
Well, we don't know all the names, but there are...
RPA and Championship.
Oh, yes,
but some of them are not that. Like,
all the England lads are, aren't they?
Fergus Musfad. Well, it depends what Rob Shaw...
And Chris Robshaw isn't anymore.
Chris Robshaw isn't, no.
Because his contract has expired and he's about to join MLR.
Yeah. Now, that is a point I made on Twitter, and I know I'm wrong on this. I think Nick Johnson on Twitter corrected me, which is good because she's very good for these legal things. Which is like, why even answer your phone? I'm off to America. Like, if it rings, no, just hang up and go. But then actually, maybe he does want a future in the English game once he returns. So
yeah, as a former England captain for a number of years, he might be able to get a lucrative gig talking at future Twickenham. Home events,
hospitality,
I guess like the Welsh team just have all the ex-Welsh players run water on for you know, something like that. I've got no idea, but I don't think I'd even answer the phone. I'd just go.
No, there's lots of things that you would do. If you were Saracens, you wouldn't have fulfilled a single additional fixture.
That is true. We would all be going out. Yeah, I did like the expression of anguish on Owen Farrell's face when he found out that he might not be playing. And I thought, I wonder if Farrell would have gone with him. I bet he would.
No way.
Wouldn't have gone.
Oh, of course he would.
No way.
They're all from the same stable. They all love the beers. It's a Saracens thing.
I would guess, I don't know, I would guess Farrell doesn't love the beers. That would be a guess.
I bet he does.
Secretly... When the time
they
is,
all do.
There's,
that's
a
diff-
there's a difference though of when the time is right.
Yeah, but
and that would have not been the right time for Faz.
How? It was not the right time for Faz because he was in an England shirt. If he's in a Barbarian shirt, he'd have gone. 100%.
If his England career was winding down, he's 34. Maybe if he was in Rob Shaw's position, so he knows he's not going to get another England cap.
Yeah.
In that scenario, I agree. if it was the rules
reversed. Every one of the Saracens boys were. It's how they're conditioned.
Finn Russell, yes. Owen Farrell, no.
Finn Sanity.
Finn Sanity.
Imagine if Finn Russell had been there.
If only. No, I think any one of the Saracens boys would have gone out. Because look at the guys who were caught. They're not amateurs. They're not bad lads. Like people like Sean Maitland are consummate professionals. They all are. Rob Shaw's a consummate professional.
Wiggy.
Apparently he's signing for Leicester Tigers.
Interesting.
Yeah, any day now.
Yeah.
Apparently, I don't know if that's true. Apparently he's meant to be signing for Sale, and that never materialised. So one of those two.
It's good he's got options. Right, let's get on to the France game.
Yes.
Here we go.
France Ireland.
Oh, Stockers.
Yeah, Stockdale wasn't high up on my list of great things, actually.
Was worse, Jacob Stockdale's performance or that weird grey line on the back of the Ireland player's shorts? I really hated that.
Stockers. And yeah. I love Stockers. I love him so much, and he's done some good things in a 15 shirt.
He did some good things this weekend.
He did one good thing, scored that try after 81 minutes or whatever it was, but...
What is that theory you keep reminding me of where you get promoted to your level of incompetence?
The Peter principle.
Yeah.
It seems to be that has happened with Stockers. He's a very good winger, and therefore they thought he could do other things, and it doesn't seem to have gone too well.
But they've not got a huge number of options.
No, they don't.
Now, Rob Carney, one of the all-time great fullbacks, and when we went back and watched his performance in the Lions in 2009, one of the all-time individual best performances on a rugby pitch ever.
Yep.
They are struggling to fill him because Stockers has got some positives, has got some big negatives. Lama, positives and negatives. I mean,
they would potentially be playing Carberry there if he was fit, but he's injured.
Yeah, but I feel again you've got some positives and negatives. Yep. I guess Mike Healy might be one of the next cabs off the rank.
Well, Conway and who's the winger?
Ross Burr,
begins with Cam. K.
Keenan.
They can both play there, but again,
Stockdale can't continue.
Now is the time. You were saying the same about Bowden Barrett not so long ago.
It's a bit different, though.
It is a bit different. I appreciate that. But my point being, 2.5 years out from a World Cup, when you've got limited options, it's not a bad time to give it a go.
Don't forget, they also tried Henshaw there.
They did.
Zero success in that one game. And Henshaw has played there in the 15 shirt, not much friend of it at all, like, but has played there for Connacht.
On the wing, he's given the freedom to go and play his game. He's still a powerful runner. All the good things he does, he still does.
His deft chip and chase is one of the best in the game. He's superb.
Two words, can they not make an exception? Simon Zeebo.
Yeah. Simon Zeebo has got the most phenomenal collection of pastel, what would you call them? Like, not sweaters, maybe? Like 90s kind of... What do you call them? Like
hoodies?
Not hoodies.
Sweater vest?
No, not sweater vest.
I've no idea what you're talking
Jumpers.
About.
Like kind of a jumper, but doing like the
sweatshirt. Cashmere sweatshirt.
No, not cashmere.
Okay,
strictly not cashmere. More like posh versions of like the old Adidas sweaters that he used to get, but with no branding. He's got one in like a very light yellow, like a lemon.
How do you know this?
He's got one, because I keep seeing him. He's got a sky blue one. He's got a white one. Just like a round neck, plain sweater.
A bit like what Tim's wearing at the moment.
Yeah, but with no details on it.
Okay.
At all, just a round neck.
This is my favourite jumper, and look, I'm going to have to get an elbow patch for it.
No.
I know.
So are you going to have to get leather? An elbow patch on both sides?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, leather elbow patches.
Simon Zeebo, I've got no idea. I'm looking him up on Instagram because I've got no idea what you're talking about.
For the pre-game.
He put a brilliant video online this week of a school athletics meet where he wins the 100 metres narrowly ahead of Keith Earls.
Keith Earls, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Ireland have got issues at 15. Simon Zeebo, he's taking his cash in Paris, and fair play to him. He's not going to get the
chance. Pastel shade jumpers.
And pastel shade
if
jumpers.
You say
yeah.
so.
I guarantee this.
That's your interesting observation about Simon Zeebo.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Good fullback, nice pastel collection of jumpers.
Yeah, great fullback.
And Andrew Stockdale.
He's only 30 years old as well.
Yeah, Jacob Stockdale needs to go back on the wing. You're depriving yourself of a world-class winger, or at least a very good winger, and you're giving yourself a championship fullback. So I don't think that is the way.
Yeah, could Stockers be being played out of a Lions spot?
Yeah, quite possibly.
Potentially, yeah.
You've got to remember, like, this lad was finishing tries for fun when he first showed up. I think he might even have some sort of record for the most tries scored out of the fewest games from debut. So, you know, he hasn't become a bad player overnight.
No.
Just what he's been asked to do doesn't suit him. And he's so far off the pace. He's running lines at the wrong time. The ball is dropping behind him. He's knocking it on. He's just not a good fullback. That's not his fault. He's not a fullback.
He can do it for Ulster and has done it for Ulster. It's the step up.
Yeah.
And he did get found wanting in this game.
I bet he wasn't the only one found wanting, to be fair. France just ripped Ireland to pieces, I think it'd be fair to say. And I think they did it in about third gear. I don't even think they were trying particularly hard.
That French back row and then Dupont and Untermack.
And Vakatawa.
Why stop there?
And Fiku.
Fiku was amazing.
Yeah.
Fiku moving from 12 to the wing.
Just think about this for a second, right? We spoke about England's try. Oh, was it good they did it off a first phase move? They passed a ball to a stationary Fiku who had to trap it with his foot. And then he scored.
They created the overlap on that because he was against Porter, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So any international winger worth their salt with a one-on-one with a tight head prop should be doing that kind of thing.
But he went round Porter, then he goes round someone else.
He then gassed Murray and then draws. And who's inside him? Who runs the most intelligent supporting lines, the best supporting lines, time and time and time again? Dupont.
Stockdale. Dupont again. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant stuff. But again, it just shows, doesn't it? Like, from absolutely nothing, they just tore them to pieces. France were brilliant in at times.
And this is, I mentioned it right at the start of the pod. This is the frustration with France. They've got the firepower to tear anyone apart when they can get all of their chips aligned, when it all works out for them, and then they can do stupid things.
Yeah. The Boutier yellow was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, what was he thinking?
And I still think that could have been a yellow and a penalty try because there is a nudge he gives Keenan, a very small, but when it's slowed down, you see it, and it does change Keenan's direction.
Just
a small nudge so he can't get near the ball and then slaps it out.
Just to bring this full circle, do you know who I think was the last person I can remember, to get a yellow card and a penalty try conceded for a similar offence?
It happened in an international game.
It did happen in an international game. He's in the dead ball area, though.
Who was it? You're going to have to tell me.
Rob Carney did it. Yellow card, penalty try.
Mm.
Can't remember against who.
I just think he was. I think Tokyo Olympics next year. France beach volleyball.
Yep,
get him in.
Get him in. Why not? The French back row is absolute dynamite. Cross Olivon. Olivon is a weird one because he doesn't look that big. I mean, he is.
No,
big.
But yeah, he's not that big. But he's just so strong.
Can I say by the way, having stood just inches away from, 2 metres away from Olivon. The other week, he is a big boy.
Is he?
Yeah.
Olivon's tall as well.
He's about 6 foot seven.
Yeah.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Christ. I mean, they're just massive. They're massive, they're skillful, they've got basically everything. And I don't know if how they play is.
What was that? Oh, I think it's something. I think it's outside the room, that.
Oh yeah, the buzz on the line isn't a lead at all. It's a fridge.
Oh good.
or a washing machine.
Or a washing machine.
Or something. Or Rudy's using some power tools.
Again. How they play? I can't work out if it's a positive or a negative. And when I say how they play, I mean their forwards. And you don't see this much, but their forwards will just pick up the ball randomly from the back of rucks and start running forward. And sometimes they get a little bit of purchase and they offload, and that's when it all sort of joins together. And other times they just get knocked back or it's not effective, but they're on their own.
That's the thing that I noticed.
Yeah. And it's always on their own.
It's a nightmare when you're going against Ireland, and CJ Stander got a couple of very good turnovers. You can't go on your own. No. For international rugby, if you go on your own like that, you're just asking to give a penalty away.
But that's how the French play. So, and you see it, it's most effective, I think. Oh, I've seen Clermont do it. They pick up and go, and they make a yard, and it's almost like in basketball, you have the triangle. So they offload, and the spot winner then offloads again, and bang, bang, bang. And before you know it, you know,
but
they're
you've
in
got,
the open.
To do that, you've got to win the collision and hit like a half shoulder so you can get an offload.
Yeah.
What Ireland and good organised defences do around the breakdown is there'll be two up tacklers, one low, one high, to stop that offload.
Well, there's that. And also, you know, maybe at international level, they can organise quick enough to stop you getting the surprise. Because even at international level, they do look a little bit surprised. Like, what are these nutters doing? Why are they coming at us in ones and twos? And they do it so quickly. Now, if you adjust to that, you've not got a problem. If you can't adjust to it, you've got an enormous problem. More often or not, they do adjust.
Mm.
And I wonder, you know, if you've played against Exeter or you've played against Leinster and you see the very structured way the forwards come at you, whether this just throws you off completely. And the other thing I thought is, does this tire out defences because they're constantly coming at you? There's no setting and then bringing your mate on and then latching and going. They're just going one after the other after the other. And I can't work out if the pros outweigh the negatives.
I quite like it in the sense that it feels quite French. If you
yes.
see it, if you see it, do it, and we'll take the odds turnover for trying. And actually, the most Northern Hemisphere sides, France aside, actually are very management of risk
yeah,
is
risk
the way they play.
Yeah.
And actually, I quite like France when they take risks.
And this is why I don't think France can ever be coached by someone who isn't French. Certainly
other than defence, which Sean Edwards is
yeah,
a great match.
They concede 27 points, that's the other thing. But there again, Ireland are no joke.
Yeah, Ireland are a very good team. Now, speaking of management of risk, so Ireland, one of my favourite topics, of course.
Of course.
So Ireland, after 68 minutes, took off Johnny Sexton, captain, and they were at that point in time they were 28-20 down. What would Ireland have done to roll the dice at that point in time
for Finn Russell?
Finsanity.
Finsanity.
Oh
exactly.
Yeah,
that would be the perfect exploitation of Finsanity.
Or Marika
Corabetti. Yeah.
Or both of them.
And that could have had the effect of either Ireland winning the game with a bit of Finsanity or Vakatawa intercepting a couple of tries and France winning the Six Nations.
Either
yeah.
way, rugby wins.
Yeah, you don't die wondering when you've got Finn Russell on the pitch.
Yeah, that would be an ideal scenario. Yeah, France are awesome. I hope they get more awesome. Looking forward to seeing more of France. Wore my French top to watch the game. I know adults shouldn't wear replica kit, but
when you're watching rugby,
as long as it's a French kit,
yeah,
I can get away with the French kit, right?
French kit.
With the French lockdown, is their rugby continuing?
I hope so.
I assume so, but I don't know
because I think I'm going to get into the top 14 this year.
Well, we can't. You can't watch it anywhere, can you?
Oh,
it's
no.
not on Sky anymore.
Yeah. Well,
there's no host carrier.
There is a protest in Manchester next Sunday, which I will be going to, of course. And I'm going to start just maybe we get a game of rugby going there because in protest you can do anything, can't you?
I might go and I might protest that top 14 is not on UK television.
Well, yeah, I'll start
a splinter protest with you for that, Phil.
Yeah, I mean we could take some beers. We could actually probably take an iPad and watch the rugby there. I mean, it's not strictly in the spirit of the protest per se, but you don't go there to protest, do you?
Well, that's possibly the only way to see your friends.
Yeah,
protest.
Let's just get everyone we know for a knees up in Piccadilly Gardens in Manchester.
Exactly.
Well, can we pick somewhere nicer than Piccadilly Gardens?
I know, it's absolutely miserable.
Yeah, it is.
We can't go to Albert Square at the moment.
Have you ever seen Piccadilly? Sorry, I know there'll be every town or city or whatever that has some horrible places. So apologies if you don't know Piccadilly Gardens. But what I would say is go and look at some old-fashioned pictures of Piccadilly Gardens.
From the 70s. Yeah. Beautiful.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. And now it's just a concrete wall.
It looks like a Soviet...
The Wave.
Wasteland.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, in a way, I'm glad the laws have caught up to, you know, so it matches the Soviet wasteland. We've now got laws worthy of
the wall.
We got there. We almost had we had pretty much the whole podcast, but we got a little bit political at the end. There you go.
So
it's fine.
Yeah, we can do a live show there. We can watch some rugby. We can do all sorts of have some salty kiss and Negroni.
Oh no, you're talking.
Until we get baton charged.
There you go. Well. Yeah, us. No, no. I'm stopping.
Good idea.
Yeah, well done, France.
Well done, France. Now, games next week. There must be something, right?
When does the autumn international tournament?
Are they definitely going ahead?
I assume it'll be next week. I don't know.
Autumn Nations Cup. Let's have a quick look. Round one.
On Amazon.
13th, so not next weekend.
Oh, God, Pro 14 next weekend.
Rugby League.
Rugby League's on next weekend. So, Cardiff play Ulster, Zebra, yeah. So, yeah, there's some rugby on.
There's Pro 14, Top 14.
Benetton have got Munster.
Some Mitre Cup. Some South African rugby. The Currie Cup's been going on. It's not Currie Cup, is it? It's Super Rugby South Africa.
Is it?
Yeah. Tri Nations, again.
Why is it called Tri-Nations?
Because there's no South Africa.
Oh, Argentina are coming over.
Seriously undercooked without some of their European stars.
Oh, that'd be fun to watch.
They might give Australia a game.
I hope so.
It'll be team runs against New Zealand again.
Yeah.
I want to see, have they changed their kit? That's a stash. I always want to see the Argentina stash.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Why did Australia decide to play in lead grey against the All Blacks?
In black. I thought it was more of a greeny grey.
It was like a very dark green.
Yeah, lead grey. Let's go.
It was more racing green than lead grey, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know.
Lead's got a greeny hue to it.
Is lead? Let me look up lead grey.
Is that like rusted copper?
I think so. I'm sure you can sort of. There is definitely some green in lead, I would say.
I'm not so sure.
Well, type in green lead.
Lead green.
just on one thing, on the plane back, we had about an hour and a half delay from Kalamata, where I flew from, back to the UK, because...
Were you flying privately, or...?
Oh, obviously, JB. No, because the wings iced up. And the wings iced up. I only realised this, the captain was brilliant. So the captain gave an announcement and said, sorry, we're going to have a slight delay because... there was some cold air on our way in on a flight here, and as a result, the fuel got very cold. The wings have iced up, and we need to wait for it to defrost.
That's weird.
Yeah, I know. And then you could tell some people around me were like, "Oh God, oh, it's so scary." And then the captain came back up and went, "I just realised what I said. Just need to let you know that's totally normal. The fuel is actually in the wings." Which I didn't know.
Did you not know that?
I didn't know that. Really? Did you know that, Phil?
I didn't know that.
The fuel in commercial aircraft is in the wings.
Well, fuel in every aircraft is pretty much in the wings.
Really?
Well, where else would you put it?
Yeah, I guess so. I'd never thought about it.
No, you want to utilise every area of the aircraft.
So, I'd always assume, because in movies, so, you know, when planes land, the nose hits and the explosion comes from there, that maybe the fuel tank was up there.
So, I went to the Hawker Museum. Was it Hawker Museum? De Havilland Museum. Maybe it's De Havilland Museum. I can't remember if it's Hawker or De Havilland. It must be De Havilland, because they've got the Nimrod there. Whoever made the Nimrod? Yeah, the Nimrod came from the De Havilland comet. So anyway, I'm going to say De Havilland, because this thing is based just outside of Stockport. And it's a little, it's like a little hangar. And outside they've got a Vulcan. Oh, Avril! There you go. It's the Avril Museum. And then inside they've got a Nimrod cockpit. And back in the day, they didn't have any of the glass screens. So you can see where the flight engineer had to sit, and he's got a dial for each fuel tank. So there's a fuel tank in one wing, and that's one dial. Fuel tank in the on the outside in the inner wing. A fuel tank in the middle, and then the same for the other. And his job is to control the fuel evenly from both sides to make sure that the aircraft is basically balanced. And he's got to flip a switch, and then that switch goes. So that's why if you went into the back of a plane when you know pre September the 11th, when you're allowed to visit pilots as a kid, you'd see the flight engineer and he'd have all those dials. That's what he was doing. Now, of course, it's all computerised.
But anyway, I've never had that before. Yeah. But the air was so cold coming in that the fuel temperature dropped. When it landed, with the hot air in Greece versus the cold tank, it caused like a condensation and ice on the wing. And
amazing. That, did, no,
that delayed us by about an hour and a half.
I think they were just making excuses.
Yeah.
There was a catastrophic engine failure and you nearly died on the
There is a really good YouTube video of someone looking out of a Dreamliner and the engine casing comes off. And that
would be worrying.
That's quite intense.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm going to watch that. Now my flying for the year is done.
Well, I mean, you've only got, what, six more, seven, what, eight more weeks. You can fit in a few more flights.
You know, maybe the European trip. We'll see.
Yeah, you'll we'll see. The sun never sets on the Cocker Empire.
In fact, let's end this podcast so I can hop onto Skyscanner and see where I can go. Although it's illegal. Anyway, we're not going there.
Yeah.
At Rugby Podcast on Twitter, he's at Jay Beardmore, I'm at Cocker, Phil is lurking and we'll find you. Let us know if you've got any local leagues being started in your local club, because we're quite interested in
cool.
that.
If you've got a cool league and you want us to mention it and, you know, give it some promotion, if it's called something good, not like the inner... The M60 Ring Road League.
The GB Cup 2.0.
Yeah, so if you can call us something cool, we'll give it a push.
Or if you want some help with a name, we can maybe help name it, or get our many brains listening to the podcast on the case to help you name it. So get in touch and let us know. You can email us contactedchasers@gmail.com, and yeah, we'll see you on the next one.
See you later.
Sweet.
Good pod.
Yeah, push some app.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.